Well, I was just also wondering, had you ever experienced any money challenges?
So I will say I did grow up in a family that didn't talk about money at all. And one thing that I do remember, and I share this with my classes, is that I remember at some point in my childhood, I think I was like a bigger kid, so maybe I was 11 or 12, and I was asking my mom for something. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember what it was, but she got real exasperated with me and said, "You just don't understand the value of a dollar."
Wow.
And that stuck with me because she had never explained to me the value of a dollar. I didn't know what the value of a dollar was. So the way that I kind of responded to that is that I actually became more of a compulsive saver. So if I got gifts from relatives, if I got a little extra money here or there, I just put it in my savings account. And whereas that's been protective in a way, because, you know, being able to save definitely protects you in the long run. Right. I will say that it's also led to some struggles with myself and with my family too, because of the, so I have more of a fear of spending because, so, you know, with my business, I haven't taken probably as many risks as I should have because of the fear of spending. I know with my husband that we've had struggles because he'll want to do something with our family and I'll say, "Oh, I don't think we have the money." We do, but I won't want to spend it.
Right.
And I'll also say that I think that there's a gender issue here because my mom experienced a lot of gender discrimination in her professional life and wasn't able to earn as much as she should have been able to earn.
Right.
You know, she was a school teacher. And I think Elizabeth Warren just shared this. It's so funny how much parallel I have with Elizabeth Warren. But I think Elizabeth Warren just shared the story about being fired when her boss found out she was pregnant. My mom fired when her boss found out she was pregnant, because in the 1970s, you could do that. You could say, "Well, you're pregnant now, you're done." And my mom went without working for, you know, quite some time and wasn't able to earn as much. And I think I watched that and I absorbed that. And so that feeling of, well, what if no one ever hires me to do anything? I've got to hold on to whatever dollars I have. And so that's been my personal struggle. I don't hear that story very often when, you know, I'm out listening to people's stories. But I think it's an important story to share. Because I think there's probably other people like me who just don't talk about it publicly. So I will say, you know, I had just asked you the question, like, what was the breaking point? I just got tired of feeling that weight on my shoulders, like, even though I know I'm a qualified professional, that no one's ever going to hire me again. And so I actually did hire a professional coach a couple of years ago to kind of work through all that with me, because I was not able to do it yourself my way out of that box. I had spent my whole adult life like stuck there, and I knew I wanted to get unstuck. And so I did work with a professional coach who does some career coaching and was able to mostly, you know, overcome that fear of never being able to earn enough.
Yes.
And, you know, it's definitely still a work in progress, but, it also is just another example of why I feel so strongly about trained professional coaches doing the work that they do, because it absolutely helped me have those light bulb moments that I don't think I could have had by myself.
Oh my goodness, I love that light bulb moment. Yes, that is such a, do you use that?
Oh yeah, I use that a lot, yeah.
I love that. I'm writing that one down. It's like, oh my goodness, a light bulb moment. That is amazing. And I totally get that whole fear of spending, because I think that's kind of where I shifted to. It's like I went from overspending to being kind of like afraid of spending, because I was so worried that I was going to, you know, never get out of this debt. It's just like, there was a point where I feel like I couldn't see past my debt. And to know that I'm here now, finally, 100% debt free, it's been about a month month and mm-hmm. a almost a month and a half, and it still hasn't sunk in yet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still like, okay, you know, I still keep checking my balances and checking, you know. Sure. It's just like you're always worried. I get what you're saying with that fear. It's like you're worried you don't have enough, or, you know, it's like, okay, am I sure I got, how much have I paid? Did I pay everything? Is everything on time? Is, you know, just, it's just that I still have that little bit of anxiety, even, I guess it'll take a little time for that to
yeah.
sink and settle in, because I've dealt with, you know, always kind of like, trying to catch up, playing catch up to my bills versus ahead of them and actually having money in the bank. That's all really new for me.
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also wonder, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen this in any national surveys, but I do have curiosity around, like, what percentage of people who live in America don't have any money related anxiety?
Yeah.
My guess is that number is probably relatively small.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because I feel like, and I would say since the blog, I've done more research and kind of really looking into history and social policy. And, you know, we have been on this path as a country of kind of dissolving all the social structures that were in place to protect families,
right,
since 1980. So we're 35 years into this kind of slow motion train wreck where people's financial lives are getting more and more fragile every single year.
Yeah.
And so it's really hard. You know, I look back on my childhood and my parents' friends, and I feel like the ones who were in unions, who had pensions, they looked pretty comfortable. Like, they knew they were, their jobs were protected. They knew they had a retirement. They weren't fantastically wealthy,
right,
but they had security. And I feel like, you know, union membership is down to 11%. Healthcare keeps getting more expensive. So
yes.
many people are dealing with student loan debt.
Yes.
That it's just getting harder and harder and harder just to be in the middle.
Exactly. That is so true. And, you know, I did an article, and I was doing a little research into it about how, you know, like you said, maybe back in the 50s or so, you know, the average salary was just like, you know, it wasn't that much, but then everything didn't cost as much either. You know, I can't remember right now off the top of my head what it was, but I think it was something like, you know, maybe $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 range, but people lived comfortably. They raised families. They lived, you know, a nice, comfortable life. And then as time has progressed, people have just gotten so outrageous with everything. Everybody wants bigger and better and more. And then the prices just keep going up and people keep paying it.
You mm-hmm.
know, they keep trying to get it. You know, it's like the more expensive things get, the more they want it. And then, like you said, with student loan debt, oh my God, that's just outrageous. I have tried, mm-hmm. my daughter just graduated from college, and we did everything in our power to keep her student loan debt to a minimum. I think she got out with a total of $16,000 for her.
That's great.
Another question I want to know is, as far as the clients that you do help, do you notice, do they have any money, you know, what's the biggest money mistakes that you notice that they make?
Money mistakes that I notice that they make.
If any, I mean, or what's is it just that the people that you help are they lower income, middle class?
They're lower income,
okay.
But I think in all the reading that I do, I think that my folks are probably representative of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that one common thing that most of my folks have is just not, how do I want to phrase it? they're not tracking. I guess that's the simplest way to talk about it.
Yes.
Is that they have a sense, you know, a lot of people do this mental accounting, like they know how much it costs to fill the gas tank. They know how much a basket of groceries is, but they're not really watching every month to see where the spending leaks are. they're just, you know, very similar to what you described in your own life, that they have a family to support, they have their priorities. Balancing the checkbook is not the priority, it's a chore. Virtually everybody I work with has never had a financial literacy class, and so they really don't know what that entails. Virtually everybody I work with did not have parents who talked to them about money. I mean, it's very, you know, far and in between when you have someone who's like, oh yeah, my mom taught me about blah, blah, blah. And you're like, really?
Right.
Oh, mine didn't.
You
know, so they have a family history of not talking about money. They just kind of got sprung into adulthood with the adulthood responsibilities, and they just needed to make it work. And so, you know, so for some people, they've gotten in trouble with credit card debt. For some people, they've had medical incidences where their health insurance wasn't good enough and it ended up on their credit report. There's some instances where I've worked with a few where the spouse took care of the money and then the marriage dissolved and the remaining spouse had to learn everything from scratch. So I've seen that happen. So, but like just as a generality, it's just not watching, and not watching from a combination of not being taught to watch, you know, and then having other priorities in your life that make watching fall by the wayside.
Oh my goodness. Oh, that's, I love that. That's very telling and interesting, because I think you're right. Because even growing up in my household, we weren't taught about money either. It wasn't really, except that we didn't have any. You know, as far as like learning how you, I love that you say they were just kind of sprung into adulthood and now they just kind of deal with it, you know, and I think maybe a lot of people, I know in my life, I can agree, and with the people from my childhood that I know my in my family, that wasn't something that we were really taught or talked about, or, and then as an adult, it's just, and then they didn't teach it in schools, and then as an adult, you just, you're just there, and it's like, okay, figure it out. And you just kind of, you either, you know, most of us do what everybody else is doing, which is typically the wrong thing. And to credit cards, you know, I got my first credit card in college. You know, it's like, I didn't even have a job, but campus, the credit card companies were on the campus, you know, pitching this to students, you know, and they didn't even worry that you didn't have a job. They said, oh, that's okay, you know, because when you get a job, we want to get you now so that when you get a job, you know, we already have you, and, you know, you'll, we know that one day you'll be making some money and, you know, you won't have any trouble paying this, or, you know, and it's, you know, you should start early. And I fell for it.
I mean, luckily the Credit Card Act of 2010 kind of took that all away. So college students aren't getting those offers the way that you and I got those offers, which is good, but there's still a whole lot more work to do.
Yes, especially being a young adult, you know, you're new to life in general. And, you know, it's just like, that sounds like, almost like, wow, a credit card? That sounds so grown up. That sounds like,
that's true.
You know, some independence or something. I don't know, but it was intriguing. I went for it, and it was a big mistake because it just led me down the wrong path. You know, I wasn't ready to deal with that type of responsibility. I didn't even have a clue at that point how to manage money. So, so I really like that sprung, just sprung into adulthood comment.
Yeah.
And do you find that they really, that once you start teaching them, do you get any resistance, or are they receptive?
You know, it varies person by person. The thing about coaching is that you really need your client to want to be there. And because sometimes I'm working on contracts with nonprofit organizations, sometimes, you know, the staff at the nonprofit will say to their community members, come on, it's going to be great. Come on, we're going to have free pizza. Let's go. And so sometimes I'll get people in the room who are just aren't ready yet.
Yes.
I will say I had this one client who she had the situation that I think I described a couple of minutes ago where she had a late in life divorce. Mm-hmm. Her husband had managed all the money and she hadn't worked. And then he left her and she had to figure out how to manage her money for the first time in her 60s. Mm-hmm. And so when we do the kind of coaching questions, she didn't really want to engage. Mm-hmm. However, she had perfect attendance. And so that stood out to me because I think she, even though she wasn't ready to talk about it, she really benefited from the camaraderie of the other people in the coaching group. Mm-hmm. And she was there and she was stable and we could always count on her. And she did have some little wins along the way.
Good.
And she did. She was able to kind of create a little cash flow that worked for her. And her housing was stable by the time we were done. And it was still a work in progress. However, I think she absolutely benefited from having the support of all these peers that were doing similar work. Like everyone had their own personal story about why they were in the room.
Right.
But they were all so supportive of her and wanted to see her succeed that I think that helped with her growth and development.
Wonderful. I think that's a support. Having support is a key. It is a good thing to, you know, help with your mindset and help you just want to move forward and even maybe holding, kind of helping you hold yourself accountable a little bit, you know, to want to make sure that you're moving in the right direction or, you know, doing the right things in your financial life. You know, you gotta look at these people and you want to show that, hey, I am doing it. I am making progress. I am moving forward. I love that, the camaraderie. I hadn't really thought of that, but I do know that having like support and having maybe even like a person, even just an individual person that you're, that can kind of help hold you accountable can, you know, really help with your mindset and your want, your motivation, you know, because it's like, you know, you have to look at this person and it, if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, or if you feel like you're falling short, then maybe it will just kind of, you know, I have to, you know, go see them again, or I have to talk to her again, and they're going to ask me about it. Or
right. Exactly. I need something to report back to. Yeah. Yeah. I think accountability really, really does help with this. And what I will say in working kind of on the programmatic side of this is getting people in the room for the first meeting is the hardest part because of the money shame in our society. People don't want to talk about it. They don't want to know that their neighbors or their coworkers know that they're bad with money.
Right.
And they're ashamed of themselves and they just want to, you know, kind of the ostrich sticking their head in the sand. Once you get over that hurdle and you've got them, you have them forever.
So the
upfront trust and relationship building in programs like this is so critical.
Yes.
And once you've been successful there, now you've got advocates that'll go out and, you know, tell their neighbors and tell their friends, and the shame has fallen away and they feel good about themselves and the self-confidence is there. And now you can run. But the first months and years, and I work with social service agencies that are trying to run these types of programs, and it's constant. It's constant.
Mm-hmm.
Is getting people to trust you
so
that they can do the good work.
Wow. Yeah. That I do know about that money shame, you know, it can be a deterrent, you know, to talking about it. But then when you realize that if you really, I mean, just like with this whole government shutdown at the earlier part of the year, it just shows you that everybody's struggling.
Yeah.
Most part. So it's like, you know, nobody wants to talk about it because, like you said, they have shame behind it. But really, we're all kind of in the same boat. So we need to talk about it so we can figure out how to get out of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you have any tips or advice that you can give to somebody who may be struggling with money issues?
You know, I think what I tend to tell people is collect information and support wherever you're comfortable doing it. So, you know, like you with your do-it-yourself, Mike, I'm just going to guess that you probably did a bunch of Google searches and you were looking for books and you were looking for articles and you were looking for people telling their story so that, you know, it would help back you up. So I think all of that is great. And that's what I love so much about FinCon is that there are so many people telling their story online and online is such a safe place to be for people who don't want to have that face-to-face conversation immediately.
Yes.
And then I would say secondarily, to get professional help because there are a whole cadre of professionals across the country who are counselors, who are educators, who are coaches, who are there and available to work with people either one-on-one or in a group or maybe on Zoom or maybe face-to-face. Mm-hmm. And there's services out there that once you're ready can do a lot of good. And so that combination of information seeking and actual professional service seeking, I think can, you know, that's what makes the difference.
Right. Oh, that's really good advice. I can't agree more. Absolutely. Information seeking and getting professional help, finding somebody that you're comfortable with. I like that. Finding whoever that you're comfortable with to be able to talk to. And, you know, a lot of times employers even offer, you know, some like through their EAP programs, counseling or, you know, and that can be done on a one-on-one, you know, kind of anonymous kind of basis where you can talk and help you through it without, you know, having to feel the shame because that's what they're there for.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yep. Perfect. I mean, they're all tools, but you have to know that they're there. I think so many people don't even know, you know, they may have heard about their EAP program and their new employee in orientation and then they forgot and they don't know that there's money as part of a service. And so it's on us as professionals to get the word out and then on people who want to make a change to go look for it because it is there.
Absolutely. Well, great, Kimberly. So this has been so informative and so eye-opening. I really enjoyed this conversation with you. And so where can people find you?
So the easiest way for people to find me is my website is dragonflyfinancialsolutions.com. Mm-hmm. And on my website are my links to my three social media sites. So I have a LinkedIn account, I have a Facebook account, and a Twitter account. And in the top right corner of the website, people can find me on social media. But they can also communicate directly with me through my website. There's a contact page, and I'm always happy to get notes and questions. And I set up on a pretty regular basis, I do free 15-minute consultations with folks if they have a question about my service. So that's the easiest way for people to find me is through my website.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much. This has been so informative. I really, like I said, appreciated and enjoyed this conversation. I've learned a lot.
Oh, good. I liked it too. Thanks so much for interviewing me. It was fun.